General Noriega still at large. Small groups of his supporters are still looting and fighting. But the new president, Guillermo Indera, has begun forming a police force made up of defecting members of Noriega's military, who, along with U.S. soldiers, have begun restoring order on the streets. The U.S. invasion of Panama, our topic today. We go first to David Dow in Panama City for the latest.
Guerrilla sniping incidents appear to be dropping off as Army units intensify their sweeps for troublemakers.
Yes, I am more optimistic, but there's still some work to do, and I cannot give you a forecast on the timeline.
As streets appear safer, Panamanians flock back to shop for Christmas at the few stores that have escaped looting. Several of the long lines have become cheering sections for the U.S. military action. Every hour brings new weapon seizures and more captured and surrendered forces of General Manuel Noriega, more than 2,200 in custody now. And happily, this weekend has brought freedom for 12 hostages of Noriega loyalists. Among them, CBS producer John Meyerson and businessman Doug Mullen. 10 employees of Evergreen Airlines escaped their captors after 2 days of terror.
Beat us with their feet by kicking at our faces and standing on our heads, and took a rubber hose and subjected our backsides and bottoms to pretty good thrashing.
Meanwhile, the U.S. is helping Panama put its own police force back on the streets. Former officers are being rehired after screening, after pledging allegiance to the new government. David Dow, CBS News, Panama.
The initial euphoria,
we have decapitated him,
has begun to sour. American soldiers could be bogged down in Panama for months, partly because George Bush's wily nemesis, General Noriega, escaped.
It's open-ended as far as going after the Noriega, open-ended in terms of the restoration of order in Panama.
Even critics give the administration an A for military planning, but a D-minus for not preventing the looting, for not building support for the new Indera government.
They have no structure. They have no experience.
For not anticipating the taking of hostages and the resistance.
They fought a little bit harder than we thought they would.
So far, 24 Americans killed in action. Peru has dropped its anti-drug efforts with the U.S. Widespread international condemnation. Will it prove too costly after all?
We'll ask Assistant Secretary of State Bernard Aronson and Les Aspin, Chairman of the House Armed Services Committee. And we'll talk with former hostages John Meyerson of CBS News and businessman Douglas Mullen.
The U.S. invades Panama. Now comes the hard part, an issue facing the nation.
From CBS News, Washington, Face the Nation, with CBS News Chief White House Correspondent Leslie Stahl.
Our first guests, we're very happy to tell you, are former hostages John Meyerson of CBS News and businessman Doug Mullen, both released unharmed yesterday, both back in the United States. John, we are all so happy to see you, and you look great. You don't even look tired. Let me ask you, we just saw a little clip in our open that some other hostages were mistreated, were beaten. Were you abused in any way?
Well, we weren't beaten or abused in that kind of way, Leslie, but we were treated badly. We were hogtied and thrown in the back of a pickup truck. There were weapons everywhere. We were taken out in the jungle. We were yelled at. They told us, if we see a gringo, we'll kill him. It was psychologically abusive.
Doug, I saw your news conference yesterday, though, and you both did seem somewhat sympathetic to your captors. After a couple of hours thought, do you think the Stockholm Syndrome set in with you, that you came to side with your captives?
We're happy to be home, and I want to say that first of all.
Well, we're happy to have you home. I want to say that too.
Yes, I think the most difficult part of the 80 hours of captivity was the desperation in trying to communicate, to understand the objectives that were constantly vacillating with our captors, and to try to identify with their needs so that we could hopefully survive. And that was the most difficult part.
Now, you do speak Spanish, so you were mainly the main translator, I assume, for John anyway.
Yes, ma'am, I was.
Let me ask
you both if you got the feeling that they were taking orders from some central authority. There's some question as to whether Noriega is continuing himself to direct a resistance, which would include hostage taking. Doug?
Yes, Leslie. Initially, when we were taken to the first interrogation point, I had a very strong feeling that there was an overall network that was being developed. Captain Carlos, who was educated at West Point, made it very clear to us that we were going to be used in some manner in the overall counter movement. And as the hours and the days went on, we began to see this overall network disintegrate, which gave us some hope and opportunity to negotiate our release.
Absolutely true. It did open the door slightly to a chaotic situation. There was no organization. Nobody was negotiating for anything. So we didn't know how it would end, but we could see the organization as it was disintegrate, as Doug said.
But the people who held you, and I know there were more, you were transferred from one group to another group, were obviously very pro-Noriega. From your experience, can you tell us if you think the United States has an opportunity to win support for what we did, and the government that we help install there, do you think they have a chance to win the hearts and minds of these people?
Well, hearts and minds is exactly what it is. At first, we gave a lot of thought to that, and Doug and I talked about it a lot. I wasn't sure. I was really worried that we'd made a big mistake and that there was a strong base of support for Noriega, for what he's done for the people. He's psychologically manipulated them. They don't have any love for Endara. They think he's a fat cat aristocrat. But after a couple of days, I began to believe that with the right kind of economic assistance, with the right kind of political leadership, we can turn this around. There's a great affection between the Panamanians and the American people, a long relationship that I think will be able to continue despite this initial break.
Doug, what do you think? You share that view?
Leslie, I share that view, and I believe the healing process will be long, and the Endara government must convince the people, all the people of Panama, that it is a government for the people of Panama and not a colonial government of the United States. And we as Americans must help in every way.
Okay. I want to thank you both very much for coming in this morning. And you both look terrific. And we are extremely thrilled to see you both healthy and looking so great. And thanks again.
Thank you.
With us, Bernard Aronson, Assistant Secretary of State for Inter-American Affairs. Mr. Aronson, do we yet know exactly or even so roughly how many Panamanian civilians have been hurt by our invasion? And I ask you that because the church in Panama, the Catholic Church, has begun to criticize this. And I'm wondering if this is going to come back to haunt us.
Well, obviously, as the president said when he made the announcement, we regret deeply the loss of Panamanian lives. There are not precise numbers yet. We have set up emergency refugee centers. I don't want to speculate because until the security situation is stabilized, you can't have accurate numbers. But we have set up refugee centers. We're putting in a lot of emergency medical and food aid, and so are other countries to their credit.
Is the number close to 1,000?
It's possibly that number, but we don't know, and I don't think it's something we should speculate on. As soon as the numbers are available, we will obviously put them out.
When the numbers come out, with the church already beginning to complain about it, and the morgues filled to capacity, they say, are we really going to begin to become the target of enormous nationalism in this country, and is it going to come back and hurt us with the canal, which was supposed to be turning over at the turn of the century?
I mean, well, let me say, first of all, there was
a
report early in this operation of a hospital filled with civilian dead, and in fact, we sent some people over to check it out. It didn't prove to be true. I don't mean to minimize the problem. There are clearly going to be civilian casualties, but I don't think we should speculate based on rumors. As far as nationalism is concerned, I think it's important to wait and see what the Panamanian people say when the security situation permits them to express their views. They did not like this government. They were terrorized and tyrannized by this government.
Meaning Noriega.
Noriega. They voted overwhelmingly at great risk to try to throw this government out. So I think that they wanted this tyranny to end. They wanted this dictatorship to end. They wanted their economy to improve. Now they're going to have a chance to do that.
Well, I want to play devil's advocate with
sure.
you, because I personally think that's absolutely right, that they disliked him. But the issue today, I think, is have we created a situation where he's no longer the issue, and we're the issue? And I guess the main question right now is, why didn't our government plan for the situation that did develop, which was chaos and anarchy, and why wasn't more done to build support or to anticipate the problems that the new government would have? Indara, the man who we did helped install, says that when we came to him the night before, or the night of our invasion, it was like a punch in the stomach. He didn't expect it. He hadn't formed a government. He hadn't thought about forming a government.
Well, no, that's actually not true. He had done an awful lot of work in trying to form a government and plan a government, and I think one indication of that is that in 5 days, he's named his senior ministries. He's named a new commander for the public forces, a new deputy commander. His White House U.S. ambassador's already arrived in Washington, taken control of the embassy. His U.N. ambassador has been named and gone to New York. His OAS ambassador has been named. And in fact, their new ambassador told me they had an economic team that they wanted to send to Washington. So he was saying he didn't know in advance that this military operation was coming, and he was taken by surprise. And obviously, he didn't know, we didn't know. It happened as a result of a dangerously deteriorating situation.
But here you say 5 days, but in those 5 days, I'm told that more than half the businesses and the economy of that country have been totally destroyed by the looting.
Oh, I don't think that's correct, but let me talk about the looting.
Yes.
3 months ago, Hurricane Hugo hit St. Croix, Virgin Islands, which is U.S. territory. You saw the exact same pictures in Detroit in 1968 in Washington, D.C. Whenever there is a temporary breakdown of law and order, there's going to be a small criminal element who will go in and break a window and steal a television set. We don't minimize the loss. We obviously regret it, and it's not a happy occasion. But you have to understand the Panamanian Defense Forces. They are not just the army. They're also the police, the customs, the port authorities. The first military goal was clearly to neutralize the PDF as a fighting force, an organized fighting force. In so doing, nobody had time to sort out. These are policemen, these are combat soldiers. So in the initial days, they had to be neutralized. Now the new government is forming a police force. 1,000 have signed up. They're going on joint patrols starting today. The situation in Panama City is stabilizing. So the fact that in a temporary breakdown of law and order, there are going to be some criminals take advantage of it is just human nature. It's regrettable,
but I don't think that's the issue.
Reality.
The issue
yeah.
is, we've seen these pictures, which would infuriate anybody who sees
sure.
them, of American soldiers standing by and doing nothing while this extraordinary looting was going on, when there was no other force available to stop the looting, to be brought in to stop the looting. In the other cases, eventually and quickly, some kind of force came in to establish law and order. It wasn't 5 days later. Why didn't, first of all, our military do anything to stop the looting? And why wasn't that foreseen? And why
well,
wasn't there
in
any
fact,
political
they are,
planning, I guess? Is
they
what
are
I mean.
Taking steps to stop the looting. But
now,
if you want to talk about nationalism and a reaction, what do you think the reaction would have been if U.S. forces were simply shooting down Panamanian citizens who were looting or stealing television sets or mattresses?
Well, did you have to shoot them to stop the looting?
Well, right now that there's an organized effort inside the city, the looting is stopped and the security situation has been taken care of. But let me repeat, the first goal of this operation was to neutralize the PDF as an organized fighting force. That was done, and if it hadn't been done, the casualties on all sides would have been much greater. And as bad as some temporary looting is, better that than 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 days of sustained combat and a lot of deaths as a result.
This was temporary looting that decimated many, 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 if not half, that's the figure I've heard of the businesses. But there's a story that the president made his decision to go in with a very small group of people that did not include you, mainly based only on the military plans, and that he did not seek the advice in the circle from people who would want to ask more about these political problems that might come up, and that he was driven by his desire for secrecy. And the question is there some problem with the decision-making that goes on in this administration, which is always driven so much by let's keep it secret and deep concern about leaks.
Leslie, had the president handled this in a way that the secrecy was compromised and Noriega's forces had had 10, 12, 14 hours to prepare and there were heavy fighting and casualties, you'd be sitting here and saying, what's wrong with this government? Can't they plan an operation which is very dangerous without losing security? So I think that is a very bum rap. This operation had been planned as a contingency for a long time. It wasn't a bunch of people got in a room and said, hey, we need to do something in Panama. It was a contingency that nobody wanted to use, but events deteriorated last weekend. Noriega's rump assembly declared a state of war. He made a speech in which he said, we will sit on the banks of the canal and watch the bodies of our enemies float by. The next day,
but what about the political
the PDF,
planning?
Excuse me. The next day, the PDF
well,
started to kill Americans.
With all due respect, we've heard that, and mm-hmm. I think there is a lot of support for going in. Mm-hmm. The question is, why wasn't there political planning?
Well, I don't know what you mean there wasn't political planning. There was by the Indira government. There was by the U.S. government. We take 2.5 months to organize a government from November to January in peaceful times. This new government has been in office 5 days. They've named their senior ministries. They already have 1,000 members of the PDF back on the streets, back in uniform, swearing an oath of loyalty to the government. You ought to give them a break and give them a chance.
Let me ask you about the canal. Is there any thinking in the administration that these treaties now have been compromised to give the canal back to Panama and that we may... try to wiggle out of the
no,
treaties?
No, just the opposite. And the president made that very clear when he announced the operation to the American people. He said that we fully intend to carry out the treaties. He said as soon as the new government names a Panamanian administrator as the treaties require it, who is qualified, he will send that name to the Senate. He said we intend to leave the bases and turn over the canal fully in the year 2000. The only risk and jeopardy and threat to the canal came from Noriega turning this country into a nation ruled by thugs.
So there's no thinking. Final
question.
Just
the opposite. We're fully committed to the canal treaties, and we're happy now that a democratic Panama will be able to implement the treaties.
Final question on our war against drugs. Peru says they will no longer conduct joint drug busting efforts with us. Are you concerned that we may have thrown the baby out with the bathwater here, that our drug effort, which was one of the major concerns here, may be seriously hampered?
Well, I spoke to the Peruvian foreign minister just the other day. I think there were strong feelings about what we did. I'm not sure President Garcia had all the information he needed. The vice president tried to reach him the evening that the decision was made, but wasn't unable to. I think over time that relationship will be repaired.
Okay. Mr. Aronson, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Congressman Aspin, when we come back.
This is Richard Kiley. They come to Boys Town when they're abused, neglected, or in trouble. They come by the thousands, boys and girls both. They find shelter and love, education and guidance, and a long-term commitment to help them grow into mature, well-adjusted young adults.
For information, call the Boys Town hotline. Toll-free 1-800-448-3000. That's 1-800-448-3000.
My name is Beth, and I need your help. My husband Joe had an accident and is losing a lot of blood. I need your help. I need to ask you to donate blood. The doctor said.
Imagine if you had to ask for blood to save the life of someone you love.
So if you can, please help my husband Joe.
Next time the American Red Cross asks, give blood, please.
I need your help.
With us, Congressman Les Aspin of Wisconsin, Chairman of the House Armed Services Committee. Congressman, our soldiers are down there basically running the country. Is this something our soldiers are equipped to do as an occupying force?
Well, I think there are people who are trained to do that kind of thing, the civil affairs groups and the MPs. But it really will get old very quickly to the people of Panama, and I think there's going to be a lot of pressure from South American countries on the Panamanian government to get them out, and that's our problem. If we leave too soon, we leave the country in chaos. If we stay too long, we undermine the Indira government.
Well, how do we get out? Do you know if we have
goals? That's the problem. I don't think we have any plans. A successful military planning gets us in there successfully. Good political planning gets us out successfully. And I think there's a lot of evidence that there was not the kind of political planning that went into this operation. Political planning that would cover the operation as it was going on, covering the looting, covering the possibilities of hostages being taken, but also what plans had we and what plans are we putting into place to make sure that the Indira government takes over, runs the country, runs the public safety of the country in a way that we can withdraw and not leave chaos behind.
Well, you heard Secretary Aronson. He seems to think that 5 days they've done miraculously well.
You also heard Mr. Meyerson's comment about what the Indira government is thought of by the people of Panama. I mean, you can't. We have a.
They did win the election, or don't you think they did?
They did, but I think that election was clearly more anti-Noriega than pro-Andara. This is not a Philippines situation. I think in the case of Philippines, you had as much pro-Aquino as anti-Marcos, but that doesn't seem to be the case
right,
here.
Now, you're a Democrat, and one assumes that you will be a little critical of the president, but try to step back from that and talk about the way the decision was made in that kind of secrecy envelope that President Bush likes to make his big decisions. Do you think it was flawed, or do you think that Mr. Aronson is right, that you can't let these things leak out?
The secrecy is clearly very important in an operation like this, less important in things like the trip to China, but clearly important in something like this. But that means that the people who are on the inside have to think broadly, because you don't have a lot of people in there. So people have got to be generalists who are in on the decision. I think that the fault lies with the people making the decision with the president, advising the president. I do believe, and it's not fatal here yet, but I do believe that there was not enough emphasis on the political side. That's the weakness of this whole operation.
Well, now, you're chairman of the Armed Services Committee. In the last few months, we have injected military troops into situations. In the Philippines, the president sent troops to El Salvador. They weren't needed,
Correct.
But he did send them.
Correct.
And now here, as the threat with the Soviet Union diminishes, do we feel maybe subliminally, maybe actually, just easy about sending our troops off in situations that maybe we would have thought twice about when we felt the Soviet Union was more of a threat? Is there a changing doctrine here?
I don't think we see enough of that evidence yet. I mean, you're talking about El Salvador, the Philippines, and Panama. Those are parts of the world that, even in the heyday of the Cold War with the Soviets, we considered pretty much something that we would look after pretty closely. So I think we don't know the answer to your question
yet. Do you support what we did in Panama?
I do. Yeah, I think it's the right thing, because I think this has a chance to really bust up the drug cartel, and I think has a chance to put in a democratic government. The question is, how is it being run? Is it being run well? I think very high marks on the military side. I think so far what we see so far, preliminary judgment, is a lot of weakness on the political side.
But you do see them beginning to restore order. You see that Indara is forming a police force.
Yes, the question is, what kind of support has he got? And what did we do to facilitate his making sure that when we leave, he's going to be in charge and it's going to be okay?
Very quickly, yes or no. Do you think that he should call for new elections, or should he try to stay on and restore order?
I think they're going to have new elections fairly quickly.
You do? Okay. Congressman Aspin, thank you very, very much.
Thank you.
I'm Leslie Stahl. From all of us at Face the Nation, we'd like to wish you the very merriest of Christmases, the very merriest of all.
This has been Face the Nation with CBS News Chief White House Correspondent Leslie Stahl. The guests today were Bernard Aronson, Assistant Secretary of State for Inter-American Affairs, Representative Les Aspin, Democrat of Wisconsin and Chairman of the House Armed Services Committee, and former hostages John Meyerson and Douglas Mullen. The executive producer of Face the Nation is Karen Shagrew. The producer is Karen Pratt. This broadcast was directed by Paul Taylor, Associate Director Susan Feldman. Face the Nation originated in Washington, D.C., and is a recorded production of CBS News.